thank you everyone for gathering this afternoon. My name is Amanda, and I have been the guest musician this week and also am director of Voices of Hope, which is a women's prison choir in Shakopee, Minnesota. And I'm really excited to share more about Voices of Hope with you over the next hour. And I've decided to do it through sharing stories, which I think is kind of the best way versus, you know, heavy on stats to really get you to sort of connect to what it is that we do together. So I've been very privileged to have many opportunities to share stories about Voices of Hope, and so I've kind of picked and chosen what I thought might work for today. So they're just little sort of snapshots, and that's how I'd like to present today, is I'll just sort of tell you the title of one of these little chapters and read that for you and play some music for you and maybe even teach you a song or two. So we'll see. So first of all, just really briefly, how I got into this work, since that's a question I often get, is essentially that after college, I did a year of Lutheran Volunteer Corps in Washington, D.C. Any LVCers in the room?
Okay.
Our
daughter.
All right. Woo. And that job had me working with homeless women in a really new and unfamiliar environment for me. And I told my supervisor, you know, I feel totally unqualified for this job. And she said, spend time with the women. Find a way to hang out at the shelter and get to know people. And so I started a choir. That was something that I felt I could do in a way I could connect with people. So I ended up doing that for 3 years. It was very formative for me in terms of what I thought about music. And fast forward several years, ended up with the opportunity to work with a prison choir. The prison actually wanted to start a choir, which is kind of unusual for it to come from them. They were looking for someone who could do it, and I was entering grad school at the same time and really interested in music and social justice, so it was really very much a Holy Spirit moment is how I think of it now in retrospect. So that's kind of a brief overview of why I'm here today talking about this topic. So I'm going to dive right into my first little story for you. This is called Performance Day. It's Performance Day. Singers are rushing into the choir room to put on robes. They've taken extra care with their hair and makeup today. After all, it's never easy to perform in front of your peers. We sing a few warm-ups, and then I read letters from fans all over the world wishing the women good luck. I only make it through a handful of letters before the women remind me not to make them cry right before their big moment. And then it's time. 6:52 p.m. Kind of an odd start time for a concert, but we had to make sure we'd finish in plenty of time for the women to be released at the 8 o'clock movement. The choir shuffled into the visiting room of the Minnesota Correctional Facility in Shakopee, where an audience of 75 incarcerated women eagerly awaited the prison choir's first concert. That evening, I witnessed the transformative power of music clearer than ever before. I witnessed it in the 25 singers smiling from ear to ear in the moments before our debut. I witnessed it from an enthusiastic and teary audience who clapped within songs. They were so moved. I witnessed it as woman after woman introduced each piece with a personal story, like how they used to sing Lean on Me with their sorority sisters, or how they're drawn to Shenandoah because they love imagining a rolling river, even though they haven't been able to see one for years since they've been locked up. I witnessed unabashed joy from each singer, and I watched it spread throughout the room. So we started singing together in 2015. I again founded the choir with the support of the prison, and we started at that time with about 17 singers, and it was never in my mind that, like, performing is our goal. I just kind of thought, you know, we'll gather together, we'll sing, and so on. So it wasn't until almost a year that we had been meeting together that we did give that first performance, and ever since that moment, you know, after that, the women have asked, when is our next performance? When is our next performance? And so that was such a learning for me, that that working towards a goal, seeing something all the way through and sharing that with other people at the prison, that was such an important part of the healing process and the self-worth and the self-pride that people were gaining through the process of singing together. So today, now we're about 3.5 years later, we've got about 50 women singing weekly. I'm there every Sunday afternoon for an hour and a half choir rehearsal. So here's the next chapter. This is called Feeling Afraid. Are you afraid? People often ask me when they hear I spend every Sunday afternoon in a room filled with 50 criminals. Afraid, I think. I'm more afraid in a room filled with college students. Merely from the perspective of a teacher, I look out each Sunday upon a classroom of the most eager students I have ever had, hungry for self-expression and community. I slowly began to learn of the trauma almost all of these individuals faced before coming to prison, which has clearly been compacted by the re-traumatization of the prison experience itself. These women are stripped of their individual identities, given a number called offender. For the 75% of women at Shakopee who are mothers, their role as caregiver has been taken away, and they've lost a piece of themselves without the ability to parent. The prison at Shakopee has a no-touch policy, which prevents the staff from touching the women, but also the women from touching each other. So some women may have gone years without the sense of positive touch. Many of the women who need treatment for drugs or alcohol addiction are not able to receive it for lack of space and resources. Powerlessness, depression, boredom, distrust, the list goes on, and it is not confined to their time in prison. For what you or I might assume would be the fantastic final day of a sentence is often filled with immense anxiety as the women face the challenges of reintegrating into a society that has already decided who they are and given them no room to change. This is the choir I have the honor of conducting. This is our web of community, and at first glance, it's in pretty sad shape. But if you look a little bit deeper, you can see music's ability to transform. For when all else has been taken away from these women, they still have their voice. Together, we're learning to use our voices for good, as singing brings back memories of childhood and reminds the women of their own children. Stories are shared about families in an emotionally safe space, weaving the choir together into a family of its own. We have fun together. Singing releases dopamine in the brain and adrenaline in the body, and nobody said it better than Christina, who after our first big concert exclaimed, "I'm in treatment and I have never felt a high like that." I'm continually amazed as new singers join choir and returning ones welcome them with open arms, stepping right up into a leadership position. These women are experiencing more positive self-esteem, exercising creativity, and learning to trust one another. Singing in a choir means having to openly receive critique and work actively towards positive change, developing skills of self-evaluation and communication. So this is what we're up to each week. This is the work of healing and community within a deeply isolating space. One singer described the transformation that is possible in such a beautifully articulate way. She wrote, "Through choir, I was reunited with the girl I had lost somewhere along the broken road that brought me here. The girl who sings in the shower. The one who lets music crawl into her heart, sending shivers up and down her spine. The girl who allows music and voice to fill the vast emptiness inside of her with hope. What a blessing it is to be reunited to that forgotten part of myself." So singing allows us this chance to cry out from our deepest places of fear and longing, and creativity breeds in that place. Last year, we had a really wonderful opportunity to collaborate with a composer, local composer in Minnesota, whose name is Linda Cockelmeyer. She led these lyric writing workshops for those who wanted to participate, and then took their texts and set many of them to music. And so one of those texts we heard in worship on Tuesday evening, this text, "Lift Me Up," we heard it in the place of a psalm reading. And Linda set that to music. So I'm going to play that for us to listen to now. One of the things when this choir first convened, what we started with was a question and answer session to ask, why would you want to sing in a choir? What do you hope to get out of this? And I was surprised to hear more than half of the women say that they were interested in this class as an opportunity for restorative justice. So this idea that by coming together and sharing our voices, that maybe we could connect with people of a different background, that we could find healing for ourselves and for the community in this way. And so very early on, we started to collaborate with outside people who we'd be able to bring into the prison to sing with voices of hope. That has become a core part of our mission, although it has almost always been a challenge with the system, which some days is more supportive than others. And so one of the wonderful collaborations that we just got to do this past spring was a collaboration with the men's professional vocal ensemble Cantus. I'm not sure if you've heard of them. If you haven't, they're a lot like Chanticleer, if you've heard of Chanticleer. So eight men singing professionally for their full-time jobs, and they came to the prison to sing and work with Voices of Hope. So this next little story is called Cantus Collaboration. Imagine the reaction of a 50-voice women's choir when you tell them they'll be collaborating with eight young, charming men. You giggle because, well, they are quite handsome, and if you've had the opportunity to hear Cantus in concert, you know of their magical ability to make any audience swoon. But for a women's prison choir, the thought of bringing a group of men into the safe space we have worked so hard to create was at first not such a welcome idea. For a vast majority of incarcerated women, men have been at the root of their crime. Domestic and sexual abuse, prostitution, coercion into drug trafficking. These are all common scenarios that have landed survivors of trauma into yet one more traumatic environment. I've worked with Voices of Hope for long enough to learn the statistics and to hear hard stories, and so I was nervous to tell them about Contus. They reacted just as I imagined they might, giving me a side eye and putting their walls right up. "Trust me on this," I told the choir. "You have no idea what's in store." Well, it didn't take long for the two groups to bond. After all, we were gathered around a common interest in music. Over the course of 3 months, Contus came to the prison to sing with Voices of Hope for 5 rehearsals, a concert, and a final debrief. Pretty impressive considering they were also in New York, Massachusetts, British Columbia, Idaho, Washington, and Virginia during those months. An anecdote that became increasingly amusing to the Voices of Hope during our time together. "Where were you this week?" someone would ask, and sure enough, Contus would share that they had woken up at 4 a.m. to catch a flight back home from Vancouver to make it in time for today's rehearsal. Updates from Contus felt one-sided to me, and so I started asking Voices of Hope to share what they'd been up to since Contus last visited. "Does anyone have good news to share?" I would ask. "Today is my grandson's birthday," someone would say. "I reconnected with my daughter for the first time in 7 years. I'm getting out in 38 days. These announcements were a stark contrast from Contus updates. But in true Voices of Hope style, laughter was on the horizon. "Okay, last one," I said, calling on a hand raised in the back row. "I saved money on my car insurance using Geico," someone joked. The room erupted in laughter, and every rehearsal is like this, a constant mix of tears and laughter. Or rather, what I'm starting to learn is a recipe for empathy. Here's another little story. This is Unlikely Encounters. Simply by standing next to one another and singing peacefully, hearts are broken open, minds are transformed, change is ignited. The unlikely encounters that happen in this space can be remarkable. Like one time when a Voices of Hope singer said that she would be leaving the prison soon and seeking work as an electrician. One of our collaborators shared that she had a close friend who was a female electrician and that she understood how difficult it could be to enter that particular field as a woman. With permission from my supervisor at the prison, we were able to give the Voices of Hope singer contact information for that electrician, a networking opportunity that comes so easily to you and me, but is near impossible for someone who is incarcerated. One of the most coincidental and meaningful connections I've witnessed started with a Voices of Hope singer who shared with the group her concern for her 6-year-old daughter, who would soon undergo a bone marrow transplant to treat her diagnosed cancer. Can you imagine being a mother and being absent for something like that? Well, it just so happened that on that day, I had brought a group of students from the University of Minnesota to the prison, one of whom was a graduate student whose research focused specifically on bone marrow transplants. She was able to tell the Voices of Hope singer exactly how the science would work and reassure her that her daughter was under some of the best care in the country. These are the kinds of moments that occur naturally in choir rehearsals, but are most often discouraged within a prison setting. With safety as a primary concern, it is easy to spiral into imagined dangerous situations of inappropriate sharing between insiders and outsiders. but this must be weighed against how dangerous it is to prevent networking, to cut off ties between incarcerated women and the positive connections they have made during their time in prison, leaving them without much choice but to go back to old habits or destructive relationships. In a recent collaboration, Abby Bettinas, the composer of one of our pieces, was able to come and talk to the choir. Her piece is called Resilience. We sang it again in Tuesday's worship, if you were here. And it's a favorite of the Voices of Hope. Coming from a seemingly privileged background, there was some skepticism at first about what Abby might be able to say to a group of incarcerated women regarding the topic of resilience. Well, she bravely talked about her experience as a 3-time cancer survivor, and the choir felt a collective surge of empathy. We do not know what each other carries, but we are learning that an important part of community is to withhold judgment and to stand together. So I'm going to play for you one of the pieces that Voices of Hope sang with Kantus. It's a Kelly Clarkson song called People Like Us. So this recording is from that collaboration in the prison. Enthusiastic audience. Mother in prison. Leading up to my first Christmas with Voices of Hope, I taught a Bolivian lullaby to the choir. I looked up from the piano to see every woman in the choir rocking back and forth unknowingly. It was a striking image which immediately brought me to tears. I asked if they knew they were doing it, and we all shared in a moment together of realization that so many of these women are mothers, separated from their children, and choir often serving as a reminder of family and emotion, closeness and comfort. That image has stayed with me for a long time, and since that moment 1 year ago, I've been curious to know more about motherhood and incarceration. I've learned that the experience of being a woman in prison is complex and often filled with trauma. Women's presence in prison often goes unnoticed because they're certainly outnumbered by the incredible amounts of men in the criminal justice system. And yet, women are the fastest growing population in prison. Since 1980, the number of women in prison has increased more than 700%. And of these women, over 70% are mothers to minor children, and most often the primary caretaker in their family. Separating these women from their children results in serious psychological and emotional damage for the children, furthering the cycle of incarceration. I can't imagine what it's like to be a mother in prison, and so I ask the Voices of Hope if they'd be willing to share their experience with you. Here are some quotes. Being a mother in prison is heartbreaking and humbling. We spend time talking on the phone and reading each other's stories. I have 3 children. Being a mother in prison goes unnoticed after the baby is born. The facility is mostly insensitive to mothers who've just went through labor pains and separation anxiety. You get 3 days to spend with your new precious little bundle of joy, and then you're cuffed and brought back to the prison. The only signs of what you just went through is the pain in your womb and heart and the sadness you feel. Being a mother in prison is really hard, but at the same time, it's making my relationship with my son stronger. My son is the main reason that I've decided to change. Being a mother in prison is a difficult emotional roller coaster. It's hard to teach her right from wrong through 15-minute phone calls. Pictures bring me joy. Being a mother in prison is heartbreaking and difficult, but eye-opening and keeps me motivated to be better than I was yesterday. I truly understand now how much my kids really love me and how much love I am capable of giving them. In Minnesota, we've got a wonderful organization called the Minnesota Prison Doula Project, and they work with pregnant mothers in prison before they give birth. They're there through the labor and then are meeting with them afterwards to help them through. And they have also done a great deal of advocacy. If you can believe it, it was just in 2015 that the laws in Minnesota were changed so that women are not shackled during their labor. It's hard to imagine that anyone would be running away in that moment. I would really encourage you, whatever state you're from, to do a little bit of reading and research on pregnancy in prison in that state and what the laws are, because there is a lot of change that needs to happen. All right, this is called Thank You for the Music. After each concert we sing at the prison, Voices of Hope circles up to spend 30 minutes debriefing with one another. I always invite the singers to each say one word for how they're feeling in that moment. Everyone insisted that one particular singer, we'll call her B, start us off. And I thought it was a little weird, but B is a little bit of a diva, so I figured, what the heck, and I handed her the mic. Well, just then, our accompanist started playing on the piano, and B stood up and started singing. Oh, man, I thought, she really is a diva. Well, she finished her phrase, and then another woman stood up to sing, and then another, and another. And before I knew it, I was in the middle of a full-on flash mob, planned and executed so flawlessly by the group during a couple of weeks I was out of town. I have to say, I'm a little nervous that I've been here at Holden for the last... They sang Thank You for the Music from Mamma Mia, complete with a perfectly timed, I know, right? With a perfectly timed delivery of tissues right into the hand that was desperately trying to hide my tears. That evening, B said goodbye. She was set to leave the prison just a few days later. She wrote me a thank you note, which included these words. Our individual suffering paints every square of these walls, but the power of our melodic voices singing together helps to strip the sadness and self-hate bare, leaving only hope. We are given many tools at Shakopee, but none have healed me like music. Good writers, right? Yeah. Empty tomb. Maybe it was crazy to head to the prison today after a full morning of Easter services, but it's the closest thing to family that I have in the Midwest, and anyways, I had to say goodbye to a dear singer. I don't have favorites, but she's one of them, if I'm being honest. She has sung with Voices of Hope for about 3 years and has been a mirror for me of the truth that anyone could end up in that dark place. I arrived at the prison today, eager to wish her good luck on her journey ahead, only to find an empty tomb. She's gone. She's gone, and I don't know when or if I will see her again. This is a hard one for me. Thank you. Yeah. An empty tomb feels so sad, so lonely. But an empty tomb means new life. Jeez. And who can argue with that? I'm so thrilled for her. She's one of the brightest people I know. I met her along the path, but this journey is her own, and now it's time to let go. Working with Voices of Hope is bittersweet, and I can't help but reflect on the temptation to stay in the tomb. Wouldn't we all feel better if we knew where Jesus was? Wouldn't it just be easier? Less confusion, more confidence in knowing. We hold on to so many things that need to be released, but resurrection is scary. It's spirited and unpredictable, unrecognizable until we feel the wounds with our own bodies. I guess I've never, thank you, look at those tissues, perfectly timed, thank you. I guess I've never felt such simultaneous heartache and deep joy. Send up a prayer for one very dear Hannah.
Best Easter sermon I've ever heard.
Thank you. That one I have not read aloud, so I don't know how to open it. That's okay. First of all, we cry all the time in Voices of Hope, so this is not new for me at all, but it may be new for you. So
if you can't touch each other,
speaking of that, Hannah, the woman I'm speaking of, who's about my age, one of my first experiences of the heartache of not being able to touch someone was her first day of coming to choir. And after the rehearsal, she came up to me and she said, thank you for choir today. I wasn't sure if I was going to come. I just found out right before rehearsal that my dad died. And I couldn't hug her or, you know, put a hand on her shoulder, nothing. I mean, it just completely heartbreaking. So just to share sort of that aspect of this, it's just so interesting and bittersweet because, of course, I'm glad she's gone, you know. And, you know, I always tell people that this is probably one of the only choirs in the world where when we shrink, it's fantastic, you know. That's a good sign. And our future vision for Voices of Hope is that we don't exist, you know. And that's kind of an interesting vision to have and to work towards. And then on top of that, legally, at least at this time in the state of Minnesota, volunteers in the prison are not allowed to be in touch with people when they leave. And, you know, I think that rule's in place for boundaries on both ends, but it also is not really very helpful when people are trying to transition and keep these networks and communities. And so people often ask me, you know, how are these women doing? And have we stayed in touch? And we haven't been allowed to. And that is one of the hardest things. I mean, if you're a teacher, you know, you want to keep up with your students and you want to know how they're doing. And so that's been really challenging. And women in prison leave frequently. And so, you know, over the course of my 3.5 years, I've worked probably with about 250 different women. And so, yeah, a lot of them are gone now, and I've been there long enough to see some of them come back, which is also heartbreaking, but most of them, I have no idea. So I'd like to play for you just an excerpt of a song. This is, in some ways, become sort of an anthem for the choir. It's called I Am Becoming, and this is just sort of the chorus. Never give up. An article was published recently from the Washington Post announcing that California prison arts programs are in jeopardy of losing their funding. To provide a bit of background, California has long served as the leading state in this field of arts in prison. In 1977, the California Arts Council launched a pilot project featuring an arts program for prisons. In response to its success, the Department of Corrections and Senator Henry Mello partnered to secure $400,000 in funding from the state legislature, and the organization California Arts in Corrections was born. I love this picture so much. While state funding has fluctuated over the decades, this program has continuously provided life-changing opportunities for incarcerated people across the state of California. Yet, as the Washington Post describes, a recent audit found that recidivism rates have remained high, and therefore, arts programming must not be working. Using recidivism rates as the only marker for success is problematic. Do we truly expect that if we give people all the tools they could possibly need on the inside in an artificial environment and send them out, that will be enough? We're making assumptions that the outside doesn't need any work. Well, as a teacher, if I give my class an exam and they all fail it, that is a sign to me that I have messed up. Either I didn't effectively teach the lessons, or the exam did not reflect what I taught. This past December, for the first time in 3 years, I was told that we wouldn't be able to have our quarterly Voices of Hope concert. This was devastating news to receive, and more than anything, I was dreading telling the choir. In the week leading up to our next rehearsal, I couldn't sleep. With tears in my eyes, I told them that their holiday concert was canceled. I was surprised by their casual response. We're used to this here. It's nothing new. We'll be okay. Well, this made me feel even more upset. I said, you all have taught me so much about resilience, but I feel sad that you're so good at receiving bad news like this because it means you've had to do it a lot. That's not normal. Before I knew it, the whole choir was trying to console me, which you now know is quite a feat. The room filled with laughter and words of assurance. Then a quieter voice spoke up. Thank you for telling us this isn't normal. because it helps us imagine there might be a future for us in which we aren't always disappointed. Maybe there are better things out there for us. We paused for a moment and then did what we do best. We sang. Last chapter, and then if you have questions, I'd love to hear them. More love. Just recently, we started a new quarter with 34 returning singers and 22 new ones. I asked the new singers, as I always do, to introduce themselves and say something they're passionate about. It's a question I learned to ask early on when I realized I couldn't turn to the usual standbys. Where do you work? Or what is your major? The question, what is something you're passionate about, often gets the response, my children, or nature, animals, even social justice. But as we went around the room, we came to a too young African-American woman who paused for a moment and then said she didn't know what her passions were, that no one has asked her that before, and that she hasn't really had any opportunities to discover what she might be passionate about. In contrast, I asked returning singers to share why they came back to choir for another quarter, or what words of encouragement or advice they might like to offer our new singers. Right away, a hand shot up into the air from a woman who came to Voices of Hope a year and a half ago, quiet and angry, but is now one of the first people to walk in the room each week, greeting our volunteers with a beaming smile. Every time I come back, she said, it's like more love. I don't know how to explain it, but every week I just love everyone in Voices of Hope more and more. Another woman chimed in, asking if we could have choir rehearsal every day instead of once a week. The difference between our new and returning singers is striking. You could point out who is new and who is returning just by looking at them. I laughed when the question was asked of whether we could have choir every day, but the more I think about it, the more I understand singing as a type of spiritual practice, like starting the day with yoga or meditation. It helps to center oneself and to practice being in community while the songs take us through a whole host of emotions. Many of the women who sign up to participate in Voices of Hope say that they joined choir partly to step outside of their comfort zones, and I have to admit it has pushed me out of mine as well. I often find myself confessing in spaces like this that I am just a musician and that criminal justice was not something I ever studied or intended to speak publicly about. But perhaps this exercise of stepping outside of one's comfort zone, while painful, isn't such a bad thing. I look at the seemingly unrelated fields of choral singing and corrections, and I've come to believe that working together across disciplines may illuminate new and creative solutions to exhausted issues, which can inform not just the work of prison choirs, but a larger mission of justice and advocacy. It is this end, one of social harmony, to which we are called. Our bodies are our instruments. Our ability to play together requires practice and an intention of togetherness. The Voices of Hope have provided a glimpse into what this might look like, and we have a lot of work to do. So that's the end of my formal comments. So we have still a little bit of time together, and if folks have questions or other things you're thinking about, it would be great to have some discussion.
Yeah. How do they become part of the choir?
So the question is how do people become a part of the choir? The choir is part of the educational programming at the prison. And so, like any class in this particular prison, it's run on a 12-week sort of academic quarter, and people sign up in the same way they would sign up for another class. And so I have, they sort of commit to being a part of the choir for those 12 weeks, and then at the end of the quarter have the option to sign back up or not. And most folks do sign back up, but we do have a lot of turnover with also people leaving, and so there's always a lot of new people coming in. I think the only thing that would keep them from being able to sign up is if they have like a particular disciplinary notice that something has happened, then they would not be allowed to sign up. Good. Other questions? Yeah.
How do you get the music that you use paid for?
Good question. So Voices of Hope is a limited liability corporation, LLC, fiscally sponsored by an organization in the Twin Cities called Springboard for the Arts. So we do raise money and we seek grant funding, things like that, to buy music, to purchase those lovely shirts that everybody gets to wear for our concerts, and to provide some stipends for our staffing. Which is really wonderful. So those are sort of our main sources for funding. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who designed your cool shirt?
Well, it was right at the very beginning that we voted on the name Voices of Hope. That came from the group. And then I told people we needed a logo, and someone came in the next week, and a friend of theirs at the prison had drawn this beautiful image of a hummingbird and a flower. And so I took it and created a logo. And since, just in the last like month, I've had like three people say, you know, hummingbirds don't go to sunflowers. Which then I just thought, well, then this is an even more appropriate logo for Voices of Hope, which is like bridging, you know, unlikely communities. Yeah. And then this is sort of, I know it looks like a watermelon kind of, but this is sort of intended to give us a little bit of a farmland here. Shakopee was originally built on farmland, and the women in the early days of the prison were farming. That was part of their sentence. The other thing I realized after I made it was, boy, it sure looks like Obama's logo with like the Hope logo. And then I thought, that's okay too. You know? So yeah, it's been quite a journey.
I wondered how widespread a program like this is. Are there others in the country? Is your packet shareable?
Yeah, that's a great question. So let's see, probably 3 years ago, I was doing a little more specific research to answer that question. And at that time, we were telling people there were more than 40 prison choirs across the country, or more than 40 prisons making music, I should say. It has been really hard to keep track exactly of that, because these things can pop up and get shut down in an instant. But there are several other prison choirs, and those of us who have been working long term with prison choirs are in touch with each other and often sharing, you know, strategies or things that we've learned, or repertoire, that kind of a thing. The lead researcher on prison choirs, if you can believe that is a thing, she is a teacher at the University of Iowa and directs a choir called the Oakdale Community Choir outside of that area. It's in Coralville, Iowa. And that's a men's choir. And what's unique about her choir, she's been there about 10 years with them. But what's unique is that they are about half inside men from the facility and half outside volunteers who come every week all year long, which is wild. We do something like that at Shakopee in the summers only. It takes a lot of work from the staff at the prison to do something like that, and she's been fortunate to have an extraordinary warden who is very liberal and progressive and, you know, wants to try out all kinds of things. Her name is Mary Cohen, and she's working right now on publishing the first ever book written specifically about prison choirs. So, yeah.
You mentioned you started this when you were beginning graduate school. Mm-hmm. Were you able to incorporate any of this work into your graduate school program?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, like every possible turn. My first year, I brought the first group of outside people I ever brought in was a group of 15 of my students from a choir that I was conducting. And they were present actually for the naming of the choir the day that we voted on that, which was really special. So that first year I was bringing in small groups of students. The second year I was at the University of Minnesota, I was conducting the women's chorus, and we, we did a year-long partnership between the University of Minnesota Women's Chorus and Voices of Hope. And so we would bring small groups all throughout the year, and then they performed together in the prison, and the Women's Chorus performed alone on the outside, and we came up with some creative ways to, kind of like we did on Tuesday, to sort of hold their spirit in the space. That was my second year, and then my third year did a really cool program where for my final recital where we performed the Bach Magnificat, and we took this lens of motherhood, and we talked about being a mother in prison. So some of those quotes I read about that, I was able to read in that recital context, which was really powerful. So Voices of Hope did a whole Magnificat-themed concert, and theirs was more like lullaby-oriented, so that experience of being a mother. And so just always kind of trying to find unique ways to bring the worlds together. And then my final dissertation was essentially a program evaluation of Voices of Hope. So if anybody's particularly interested, I'm happy to send that to you, but it's long.
So it sounds like you're studying choral music. So what do you let go of in terms of technique mm-hmm. with this choir, or what do you focus on to get them to self-express?
Yeah, gosh, that is such a good question. I let go of a lot. A lot. I would be curious to hear. So my friend Mary's here, and she has accompanied many times. I'd be curious to hear an outside perspective. I think often what I'm going for is illumination of text and of meaning in a song. I'm letting go of like tuning, you know, I'm letting go of certain wrong notes or whatever. Like, to me, it's most important that they are going for the self-expression piece of it. I would say in our little, you know, we always start with a warm-up. And so to some extent, I am trying to get healthy singing, you know, from them. But I don't harp on stuff. I mean, it just isn't worth it. Is that a fair response? Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah.
How does prison administration justify not allowing the concert?
I think their reasoning at that time was that there was a staff shortage. Which is true. There is staff shortage all across prisons in Minnesota and likely in other states. The irony is that it doesn't really take any staff to put our concert on, so it didn't really make a whole lot of sense. They're not really around for our concert anyway. But you know, those are the biggest challenges of working within this system, is things can get shut down in an instant. We've had every possible thing happen to us. You know, we'll drive to the prison and be told, sorry, you can't come in today, your name's not on the list. Well, I've been coming every week for 3 years. Well, it's not on the list. Like, oh, how did that happen? You know, so those kinds of things happen a lot. We've gotten stuck inside the prison where we'll be in a rehearsal, and then some incident will happen elsewhere in the prison. The whole prison will go on lockdown and we can't leave. So that's happened. But the concert being canceled was, and especially that time of year, you know, that for a holiday, like that was the only thing keeping people going through Christmas. And so we ended up on that day, what would have been our concert, I handed out sticky notes to everyone and had people write down either like an intention or a person that they wished could be in the room for our concert. And we stuck them all up on the wall and we sang our concert. So you just have to find creative ways to create meaning, even otherwise the system wins, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first two pieces that you played as we were coming in reminded me of black gospel music and slave songs. And then as you talked about the life in prison, how similar that seemed to me to be to slave life and what they must have to also, that they also had to deal with those terrible issues of separation and abuse and disappointment and such.
Yes. Yeah, there's a wonderful book called The New Jim Crow, if you have not had the chance to read it, by Michelle Alexander, which is essentially talking about exactly what you're picking up on, that the incarceration system really has just been a new way to enslave really the same black and brown people. Most people are surprised when they either see my pictures or hear me talk about Minnesota that there are so many white people in the Voices of Hope. Minnesota is a very white state. The percentages still, when you're comparing the number of African American people in the prison compared to the number of African American people in the state, those are still always off significantly. And especially in our case, the most shocking statistic is of Native American and Indigenous populations. There are 20 or 21% of women in the prison are of a Native background. And in the state of Minnesota, it's less than 1%. Mm-hmm. So there's something going on there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But to say that the energy or the expression that they share through their music is very similar to what I've heard from black choirs. I mean, I've heard college choirs who are, you know, skilled singers singing gospel music, but you hear a black gospel choir sing, and it's a whole new meaning.
Yeah, I mean, the choir I work with certainly sings with gusto. I've worked simultaneously with college choirs, and with these college choirs, I'm like, please sing out! Like, don't be afraid! Just do, you know, whatever. And with Voices of Hope, I'm like, okay, everybody, like, listen to people around you. I'm glad you're so excited. And it's interesting to really think about that, you know, what's going through the minds of these college students that, you know, it's judgment and fear of being seen and vulnerability, those kinds of things, versus anyone who's an oppressed population who is just longing to be heard and to, express themselves. And I think we have to be careful to, like, not to prize that sound, because it is coming from such a negative environment. So it's an interesting thing to sort of wrestle with around, you know, for example, people often will say to me, like, oh, you're doing such a great thing, blah, 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 blah. And sometimes I just hate those comments because I feel like, you know, if you gave a starving person a piece of bread, they would be so delighted, you know, and it's just a piece of bread. And I feel that way too. I'm just like, you know, what we're doing is great, but there's so much more that could be done. And what you're seeing is that enthusiasm of a starving people. Yeah.
How do you choose the music? What type of music do you choose?
It's a good question. I try to look at different genres, different languages, different backgrounds of things. I'm usually drawn to text first. It's been hard to find music that is of sort of an elementary music level. We're not the greatest choir in the world, but that has text that is meaningful, you know, so we don't want to sing, you know, really elementary pieces. We have done some experimenting with commissioning people to write for us, and I think that's something we would like to do more of, although that costs money if we want to go down that path. But it is kind of a unique group to find the right music. And then I am always looking for things musically that are really melodically driven, that, you know, I never really know how much time I'm going to end up having on something. So it has to be something where we can have a high level of success really quickly. And then if there's time, we could expand and add a harmony part or something like that. So it's a challenge both musically to find things that will work for the group, but then also things that are meaningful and hopefully, you know, everything speaking to somebody's situation or background. Yeah.
Are there many that read music?
You know, it's a mix. I remember one of the most shocking people I encountered was, it could have been me. Her parents were both music educators. She was fantastic. Sight reader, you know, had sung in choir through college or whatever, and I just thought, oh, that you are me. Like, that was really hard. Mm-hmm. But it's a real mix. I have some people who I always hand out a lot of sheet music, and then I always try to teach a few things, but only by ear. But I have some singers who don't even want the sheet music because they just want to learn by ear. Yeah, it's a mix. But I do try to teach some basic music reading skills, which has been really fun. Actually, people have, I think, taken on to that pretty well. Yeah.
You ever sing in, like, voice parts, like, split it up?
Yeah, I would say usually at most we'll do, like, three-part stuff. It depends on how complex it is. But, yeah, we'll do some two-part, some three-part. So, yeah, we do. Anything else? We're just about out of time. Yeah.
So I just wondered, I don't think this has happened, but I would love it to. Has ever PBS or NPR picked you up and decided to do a little programming about this or other prison groups? It would go, I mean, it's the music. I mean, because of the music and the verbal mm-hmm. BS,
was
you wouldn't even need NPR, would just be.
Yeah, we've gotten some press. The challenge has been the prison always has to sign off on anything like that. So they have not been open to video yet since I've been there. So at one point I was speaking with someone from NPR and then they said, oh, we can't do video. Well, never mind. So we'll see if it comes back around. I did have the opportunity about 3 years ago to do a TEDx talk about this work. And so if that is of interest to you, you could just Google Amanda Weber TEDx. Some of the slide where I list all the challenges of incarceration and then it transforms, that's a part of that talk, so you would see that again. And other prison choirs have gotten press as well. We did a really cool project with an opera company in New York City where we recorded the voices of several prison choirs and they incorporated that into Fidelio, an opera by Beethoven. So there's always just really cool ways to sort of get around the rules, and that's I'm getting really good at that. So thank you all so much. I don't want to keep you over, but if you have other questions, I'd be glad to connect with you. Thank you.